That is not enough to establish the point, for the lady's Christian name is incorrect, and the association of the names of the two individuals may have been accidental. The contents of the slates. One good afternoon, dear Admiral. I am so very pleased that Papa has come to know you so well. I hope you will be of mutual aid and companionship. I am heartily glad to greet you. I am quite familiar with this coming. Truly, Bailey Sladen. Too good afternoon. Is it not delightful to meet in this way? So many persons think me dead, and I presume they are forgetting me. I shall meet them when they come over and surprise them. I am glad I can do so well with this little piece of pencil. I feel about as I felt during my life in the physical body. Let me come again sometime when I may write better. You have a great usefulness of life before you in this field of work. Henry Usbin. I will always help you. Mary Bowman. 3. This is about the most remarkable experience one can have. I feel as much myself as formerly I felt. I am not changed to another person by this wonderful translation from the earth to the spirit state. Your visit here today will make me happier than I have ever been. I shall come again. Your book will be a great success in all ways. Affectionately, Septimus P. Moore. Note that the medium was aware, and, consequently, his familiar spirits were aware, that I was collecting material for a book. At right angles to the above, and in a very different handwriting, was the following letter: My charge, oh, do not be lonely, for time cannot sever the charm that unites us in memory's chain. E'en though death the sweet voice seems to silence forever, in spirit its accents will waken again. I am pleased that you do not relegate me to the oblivion of the tomb. I have life, the immortal spark, the spirit cannot perish. I am living and happy and contented. I wish you could be here with me. Do not ever mourn me as dead. Signed, the earth name of Iola. Iola. Did not we have a delightful talk this forenoon? Considering the close communication that I had enjoyed with my guide throughout the previous 2 months, this letter is nothing short of idiotic. It affords no evidence of identity whatever, but it is a clear proof of the presence of invisible beings, or being, in the room who had heard our conversation, seen the name, and written the script. For I feel grateful to the powers that be for the beautiful privilege of meeting you and communicating in even this brief way. I cannot soon, sick, write a great deal, but even a few words will express my existence. Endeavor to in some way establish means of communication when you get back. I should prize such a privilege there. I am at rest and I do not suffer the pains and vexations and troubles so common to mortal life. I am so glad that you came on here. Devotedly, Catherine Moore. It was in the upper left-hand corner of this slate that the drawing of a head appeared, with a stalk of forget-me-nots underneath. On the left side of the head there is a shadow of the same face, which is very remarkable. 5. Dear brother, now, is not this great that I can write on this slate with this bit of a pencil? I am not in the slate, I am on the outside of it. I write this through the law of the fourth dimension in space. Sit with the slates in your own room. I might write then for you. I am at rest and contented here. I am often near you. Brother Alden Moore. Underneath, in red pencil, and a different handwriting, I salute you. Uncle Major. I have no doubt that Mr. Keeler genuinely believed that evidence would be forthcoming of the identity of the spirits summoned, but it did not happen that I obtained it as others have done. This sitting was a most striking exhibition of spirit power, and that, in my opinion, is all that can be reasonably expected of this particular phase. The atmospheric conditions were perfect. My readers must bear steadily in mind, 1, that there was full light, 2, that the slates were held above the table, with no cloth or covering of any sort over them. I have read the reports of past slate writings through Eglinton, Davy, and others. No explanation I have read will meet the case of this manifestation of spirit power through P. 0. Keeler. I heartily congratulate this gifted psychic on possessing a faculty which enables those who work through him to demonstrate in a convincing manner the presence and activity of the invisible intelligences which surround us. I left for England the following morning. Chapter 10. The Voices. Mrs. Rhett in her prime as a psychic, nothing happens unless there is somebody with her who can speak and hear, her daily routine, a public seance. Her personality evinces itself only in one way: records of my sittings in January and February, 1911, voices of the so-called dead not identified, William James, Richard Burton, the suicide, voices can be beard in full light, darkness best, Edna Silvermoon, my sister Catherine, Dr. John of Ontario arrives, voices in English and German heard simultaneously, Galileo Greek and Latin spoken, Ada Newton, her message to her father, Dr. Graham of Toronto, his comments on the operation of nephrocolopexy at the hospital, Ada Besnitz sits with Mrs. Rhett for the first time, Pansy, Iola manifests at every seance, she shows familiarity with my surroundings at Portsmouth, Mr. R., a deaf farmer, sits with me, two voices again speaking at the same time, no jealousies in spirit life, Professor E. J. Stone, F.R.S. My guide knows what I was doing in another city 2 days before, Dr. Sharp, the control, affirms that he was at Chicago with me, Iola, I cannot make out why you do not see me, Gray Fever pays me a visit at Detroit. His warning about Johnson, testing Iola as to what she could see in my room, Mrs. Rhett at New York, the medium, Mr. A. W. Kaiser, has developed considerably since 1909, Dr. Jenkins, his chief control, Catherine and others helping to prepare conditions for final experiments with Johnson, Sir Isaac Newton, personating spirits, gravitation and anti-gravitation, high spirits impress mortals, Lombroso experiment with Dr. Jenkins, anti-gravitation and the musical note, goodbye from Jenkins, epilogue. In the beautiful city of Detroit, in the state of Michigan, there are nearly 500,000 inhabitants. Over one-third of these are intelligent Roman Catholics, conscientiously opposed to the display of psychic phenomena. In a pretty villa, built to her own design, 3 miles from the city hall, lives, unmolested, Mrs. Rhett, a so-called trumpet medium, whose mysterious power I have described in Chapter 8 of this volume. She has done more good, probably, than any medium in the world, in being the passive means of affording consolation to the bereaved, and in bringing hundreds to the certain knowledge of the proximity of the spirits of their relatives who have passed the change we call death. For my part, I can only say that, in her presence, I obtained evidence of the next state of consciousness so clear and so pronounced that the slightest doubt was no longer possible. I left her house in February, 1911, in the condition of mind of a man who no longer fosters belief, but who knows what is his destiny when the tomb closes over him and his spirit leaves the earth plane. Mrs. Rhett is 49 years of age, a slightly built, delicate woman, much subject to bronchitis and neuritis. Last year, 1910, she had what she was told by the physicians was neuritis at the base of the brain, and would have died had it not been for the benevolence of Mr. C. A. Newcomb, an investigator into psychic matters, who summoned a celebrated specialist and saved her life. Since her recovery, her power has been more remarkable than before her illness. I was fortunate enough to sit with her on this, my third visit to the States, when she was in her prime as a psychic. When she heard I was in the neighborhood, she wrote to me asking me to become her guest. I accepted this kind invitation, and spent 20 days in her house, where I occupied a room near the séance room. Incidentally, I may mention that I was more comfortable in this house than I was in 1909, when I put up at the two best hotels in the city. She keeps no servant, assisted by her husband, she does all the work of the house during intervals between her séances. In my opinion, this is beneficial to her, for it completely diverts her attention from psychic matters. Probably her life is wisely guided by her control, Dr. Sharp, and other good spirits. She cannot see one half the people who apply for sittings, but she does her best to give satisfaction to all. The poor are often admitted for nothing. Her usual fee for each sitter is $1, but, once a week, she gives a public séance, when nobody is expected to pay more than half a dollar. It is on these occasions that the poor are often invited to join the circle without paying any fee. Mrs. Rhett cannot obtain phenomena when sitting by herself. About 12 years ago, she was asked, as an experiment, to sit with seven deaf mutes from Flint, Michigan. No one in the room could utter an articulate word except herself. Two of the sitters were frightened because they were touched by the trumpet. No other results were obtained. Of course, it was not to be expected that the sitters would hear anything, but the point of the story is that the psychic did not hear a word herself. If there is but one child in the room, who can prattle and hear normally, manifestations take place. My experiences with this wonderful medium in 1909 were insignificant compared with those on this, my third, visit to America. All my relatives that I wished to hear from spoke to me at some time or the other, touching upon all sorts of subjects of family interest. Iola talked daily at considerable length, often standing before me, a radiant figure in white garments but features invisible, clearly enunciating her sentences in pure English. As I have said in a previous chapter, Mrs. Rhett speaks Yankee. English was not spoken by any spirit friends of American sitters. Most of my sittings were with the psychic alone, when Iola would manifest and explain matters which happened as much as 50 years ago. When I was a boy, a family tangle took place which puzzled me very much. Up to this time, 1911, I had not even suspected the real truth. My guide, in the course of four or five interviews, solved the enigma, and brought three witnesses from spirit life who spoke at some length to prove that she was right. Dates were given and motives explained. I possessed just sufficient knowledge of what had taken place at that time to be able to assure myself, now that light was thrown upon certain incidents, that all they said was true. No one living knows anything about it except myself. But I am certain that the explanation, given with great earnestness and wealth of detail, by these visitants from the next state of consciousness, is the correct one. If I had no other experience to record in support of the doctrines of Spiritism, this story, told in clear accents and exhibiting intimate knowledge of Tain life, with all its mistakes and failures, would have been sufficient to settle my belief forever. It might form the subject matter of a novel with a good moral. Before giving an account of my sittings with Mrs. Rhett, I will endeavor to describe the routine of an average day in her house. At 6 a.m., she and her husband rise, see to the work of the house and prepare breakfast. Breakfast about 8 or 8.30. Mrs. Rhett clears away the table and proceeds to do the rooms. A telephone bell rings. Perhaps Mr. Rhett is able to answer it, more likely he has gone out to do the shopping. Is that Mrs. Rhett?
Yes.
Can you give me a sitting? I am sorry to say I am not able to see anyone for 10 days. Can you not see me for half an hour?
No, madame.
What do you charge for a sitting?
$1.
Well, I guess a really good sitting is worth $1. Then Mrs. Rhett goes upstairs to her rooms. Knock at the front door.
Can I see Mrs. Rhett?
No, sir, I am Mrs. Rhett, and I am full of engagements for 10 days. After some attempt at persuasion, this visitor departs. The rooms being finished, say by 10.30, Mrs. Rhett assures herself that her husband is in the house, and then comes to me. Admiral, I think now we can have a sitting, and we will have another, if you wish, this evening. We sit, say for 45 minutes. Then Mrs. Rhett prepares the dinner, lays the table and answers, perhaps, two or three telephone calls. Sometimes these calls are requests for sittings, but not infrequently chats with friends who are in trouble, and sure of the immediate sympathy of the psychic. Dinner at 12 or soon after. At 1:30, after the table is cleared, Mrs. Rhett attires herself for the afternoon. At 1:45 or 2 o'clock, a party is let in for a séance, promised days before, and remains an hour or an hour and a half. During this time, two or three people are admitted into the drawing room by Mr. Rhett to wait their turn. Telephone calls answered by Mr. Rhett at the rate of about one every hour. The first sitters having departed, the second group are taken upstairs, no interval between, and another seance takes place. Mr. Rhett comes to have a chat, and we both hear distinctly the loud voice of Dr. Sharp, the control, 40 feet off, through the locked door of the seance room.
Possibly Mrs. Rhett is then able to give me a half-hour conversation with my friends in the next state. Then she goes down and prepares the tea, her husband having reported to her the telephone calls that came through during the afternoon. Tea takes place about 6 or 6:15. At 8 o'clock there is always a séance, arranged for long beforehand, which generally lasts 2 hours. And so the day's work ends, and the psychic gets to bed about 11 o'clock. One night I sat in a public circle, when there were 12 persons present besides the psychic and myself. Two young people, brother and sister, sat on my left. They had been invited by Mrs. Rhett, as they were too poor to give the ordinary fee. Black Hawk, an Indian spirit, gave a war-whoop when phenomena were going very slowly, which frightened one lady so much that the door had to be opened and water sent for to restore her. Another lady, on hearing the prattling voice of her little child, not long since dead, fell back in her chair, weeping for joy. Her neighbor tried to pull her round by saying, "Try and compose yourself, madam, or you will destroy conditions for other sitters." The sobbing then ceased. As the sitters filed out of the room, some of them paid the psychic, who never asks for her fee. The bereaved mother did not give anything. I took the liberty of asking Mrs. Rhett how much she had received that evening. She told me $3.50. Three people had slunk out of the room without giving a cent, yet all had some friend from the other side who came to talk to them, and the séance lasted 2 hours. The failures to obtain phenomena when Mrs. Rhett is present are about 5%. If she does too much during the day, Dr. Sharp, her control, does not speak in the evening, and no spirits manifest. Her average takings during a year when she is not ill are $7 a day. She has, however, some kind wealthy friends who would never allow her to be in want, so richly do they value the blessings she showers around her. I generally sat alone with Mrs. Rhett. The strain was great. My physical system was much drawn upon, and I became ill. This was the inevitable payment for extraordinary phenomena. Dr. Sharp would not allow his medium to be depleted, and I, being the only sitter, had to suffer. I did not recover my full, normal health till 6 weeks after I had landed in England. The usual order of proceedings was as follows. I brought bunches of narcissi or some other flowers into the room, and placed them on a small table. Having ascertained that I could hear the voices in broad light through the trumpet, though with difficulty, we decided to sit in the dark, Mrs. Rhett on a chair opposite me, and about 4 feet distant, the table with flowers on my left, generally, and opposite to it a vacant chair, completing a sort of circle, in the center of which was placed a telescopic trumpet. After a few minutes phantoms could be seen about, near us. They appeared first close to the flowers, and returned to them from time to time for strength. I did not once identify a face, though others did, but I knew who was before me by the height, build, and speech of the spirit, for they often spoke with a trumpet while standing. Mrs. Rhett will sit anywhere her sitters wish, but the above plan was found to answer best. Dr. Sharp, the control, who spoke sometimes through the trumpet and sometimes without, usually manifests early in the séance in a loud, clear voice, and he often comes back at the end of the séance to say goodbye, or to explain some doubt which has arisen from the ambiguous utterances of one of the spirits. After the phantom phase is over, and Dr. Sharp has finished talking, whispers are heard through the trumpet, and conversation takes place. When I sat alone, this used to go on from 40 to 50 minutes. The goodbye of Dr. Sharp was the signal for opening the door. If he did not return, we waited 5 minutes after the last communication, then asked to be told by raps if the séance was over. In the case of no reply, we assumed it was no use waiting longer. My notes were made, immediately, in the back drawing room. I only once attended a public séance, but I often used to sit in my room in the evening, reading and writing, while large séances were going on between 8 and 10 p.m., and heard distinctly the voices, not only of Dr. Sharp, but of other spirits. Curiously enough, no phantoms ever appeared to me in my room, and even my guide was only able to make herself known by knocks. In the description of some of the séances now to be related, names of eminence will appear from time to time. Every investigator knows how we are baffled in psychic work by spirits who personate, and I am not prepared to assert that those who came were the distinguished men they purported to be. I prefer to keep an open mind on the subject. I may say, however, that, considering the small number of investigators about, and the anxiety on the part of the inhabitants of the spirit world to make their existence known to the people on the earth plane, I do not see any inherent improbability of even Galileo coming to the seance room of Mrs. Rhett to make himself known. Mrs. Rhett is never in trance. She joins in the conversation with the spirits, and often gives the name and description of a spirit coming before that spirit makes itself known. Her personality evinces itself only in one way, the expressions used by the spirits. My friends spoke pure English, but occasionally their sentences were framed in a way they never used in life. For instance, my guide would reply to a question, "How is so and so?" by saying, "Oh, he is getting along all right." During her life on the earth plane, I do not suppose that Iola ever made use of such an expression. My mother has been heard to say, "So and so is lonesome," a word which certainly was not in her vocabulary when in this life. I have already reported that I was never able to identify my visitors by their voices. It is like hearing a message through a long-distance telephone. January 1, 1911. Arrived at Detroit, and took up my quarters with the Retts. There was a seance at 9 p.m. Sitters, Mr. and Mrs. Newton, Mr. H. C. Hodges, and myself. Atmospheric conditions bad. Their two children in spirit life came to Mr. and Mrs. Newton. Mr. Hodges was visited by three spirits who talked in unmistakable Yankee, and I by Iola, her brother, and the brother of a relative by marriage, who all spoke pure English. Iola referred to the seance of the previous evening with Miss Ada Bisnett. Monday, January 2, 1911. Time, 10.50 to 11.50 a.m. First came Dr. Sharp, loud and distinct. He cleared up the identity of one of my visitors the previous night. Then came Sir W. W., who brought Mr. W. E. Gladstone. There were many large, round, illuminated discs and some full-form phantoms. Throughout, I could never identify any spirit by its face, but I could see that there were features. I very nearly recognized the complete face of Mr. Gladstone. His was a tall form, and remained some 2 minutes. After he had disappeared, he spoke through the trumpet. I need not say how surprised I was at this apparition and voice. I had never spoken to Mr. Gladstone during his earth life, and saw no reason for his coming to me, except, perhaps, the fact that one of his distant relatives is a friend of mine, and an ardent inquirer into psychic phenomena, also that I always admired him as a man and a great statesman, and had often thought of him during the recent political struggle. He stopped about 20 minutes, and talked about the present position of affairs, about Queen Victoria, King Edward, and our sovereign King George. He said, "In my time we used to flatter ourselves that no one could follow us, but we were mistaken. What do you think of the present cabinet?" I replied, "In my opinion, sir, it is the most brilliant cabinet that has ever ruled Great Britain, but I wish the Chancellor of the Exchequer would express himself with more moderation, as it would give him more influence." He said, "I do not agree. He must speak out very straight at this juncture." His speech on the Catholic danger was admirable. There must be no religious predominance. We must have home rule. He spoke in the highest terms of the present government, and sent messages to Mr. W. T. Stead. Note that Mrs. Rhett and her husband know nothing of English politics. Mrs. Rhett had heard a good deal of Mr. Stead. The medium then said, "I hear the name F. Someone connected with F is coming." I replied, recognizing the name as that of a near relative, "Is it the elder or the younger of the two daughters in spirit life?" A voice, "Good morning, uncle, I'm E, surname blurred. Q, are you E, S, A, yes. Q, are you happy? A, very much happier than on earth. Q, do you often see Iola? A, auntie. Oh, yes, there was a talk about her sister in spirit life, and my niece left." Note the evidence of identity in this case. The acknowledgement by E. S. that she was a daughter of F, a niece of mine and a niece of Iola, all correct. Then came a man who could not give me his name, but said he had known me in some foreign place, where I dined with him. We had smoked in the conservatory. He said, before you reached home I had passed out. You were ordered to go to this place. You were my guest. I died suddenly. Q, are you Richard Hodgson? A, no. It was not in America. I have not yet identified my visitor, but think I know who it was. 102, January 2, 1911. 7.15 to 8.15 p.m. with Mrs. Rhett alone in the dark. After some relatives had come, the psychic heard the names Henry and James. Henry is a brother-in-law of mine. Then a voice came to me through the trumpet, I am Professor James. We discussed the experiments of Professor Hislop with Miss Ada Bisnett that were to take place in a few days. After this he said, do you think that Stead would like me to attend his circle? I know his son over here. I replied, yes, I will ask him. Thank you. A happy new year to you. The psychic said, I hear the name Alexander. I replied, I know two Alexanders. A whisper through the tube, I am Alexander Usban. M.S. girl Iola brought me here. We had a little chat about his kindness to me as a boy, and he departed with New Year greetings. So Richard Burton then manifested. I said, you were interested in this subject when in life. Answer, yes, I was. Question, it was a pity that your wife destroyed your manuscript. Answer, a great pity, but women do queer things at times. Then followed New Year greetings. After a few minutes the psychic said, there is a man here who has been shot — he shot himself. He appears to me to have committed suicide. A whisper through the trumpet, George. I was with you in the Penguin. I at once said, you are George, do you not regret your rash act? Then came this remarkable answer, no, I do not. I was, emphatically, impelled to do it, a groan. Admiral, she would not marry me, as I had not enough money, and there was a richer man than I in the background, a groan. Question, what sphere are you in? Answer, the fourth. Question, what are your duties? Answer, I help where I can. Admiral, help me with your thoughts. Goodbye. This incident took me back 20 years, to a day when an officer under my command shot himself in his cabin. An inquiry was held, and some papers found clearly proving that he had recently received a letter from a girl who had withdrawn her promise to marry him. I do not believe he is in the fourth sphere, or anywhere near it, and, if he maintains his unrepentant attitude, it will be many a long year before he gets there. The psychic then said, I hear the name of C. A voice, I am Mr. C. Question, are you the architect? Answer, yes. Question, I did not know you in your earth life, but I often hear of Mrs. C. Answer, yes, my wife is a wonderful woman, wonderful. But she is now losing her intellect. The lady in question is nearly 100 years of age. Mr. C. was brought by Iola, who spoke at the same time as he did, independently of the trumpet. The psychic, I hear the name of Greenleaf. I do not know if I have got it quite right. A voice, Greenfield. I am Mrs. M. Question, which Mrs. M? There are two. The spirit indicated her residence, and said, I have met you. There are two Mrs. M.S. sisters, both are alive. I had met this lady twice. Greenfield is the name of my son-in-law, who is a connection of Mrs. M, and it was evidently used to attract attention. This seems to be a case of an earth spirit traveling during sleep. The time in England was about 2 a.m., January 3. A talk with Iola about family matters closed the séance. Thursday, January 12, 1911. Sitting with Mrs. Rhett alone, from 2.15 to 8.40 p.m. First I tried the trumpet in full light, putting the small end to my left ear and balancing the open end on the back of a chair, Mrs. Rhett sitting close to me on my right. I heard the voices of Dr. Sharp and Diola quite satisfactorily. This done, we put the lights out and sat in the dark. Nothing occurred for half an hour, after which two phantoms were seen close to me, but the faces were not recognizable. The voices commenced with that of my guide, with whom I had a conversation of about 20 minutes. Then a sister came who had died at 2.5 years of age, and grown up in spirit life. Both alluded to a seance they had attended to meet me at the Johnsons 2 nights before. Next came an old clergyman at whose school I attended between the ages of 6 and 10.5 years.